Episode 19, a podcast unveiled. Welcome to Meeple Night, a podcast about board games past, present, and future. In today's episode, we discuss recent plays, review Mystic Veil by John D. Clare, and have a quiz at the end to test our board game knowledge. I'm your host, Andrew Caprell, and here's my co-host, Josh Knight.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks for tuning in for yet another episode. And Andrew, I actually feel like I've seen you recently, which is a rare thing here lately.
New Year's resolution this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been seeing each other quite a bit.
And yet we still want to hang out with each other.
Well, I mean, at least once a week.
I guess if we have to.
And text to each other. Yeah.
No, it's almost like we're friends.
Ugh, don't use the F word.
Yeah, okay.
Makes me feel committed, and then I'm not sure I want to be around anymore. You know?
Yeah, that's what Nicole would say, but she's a bozo.
Oh, man. All right, well, I'm going to turn it on you first this week. So what have you been up to?
All right, so we have been fortunate enough to actually have power the last couple of weeks, so that's been great. And as a result of having power, Veronica and I have been playing a lot of games together. But that's neither here nor there, because I'm more or less trying to prepare for us moving down to Myrtle Beach. So trying to get all the finances and all that boring stuff that you have to do to to ensure that everything's lined up for when you go to a new place.
Yeah, adulting. Yeah. But not decreasing, you know, board game purchases, because that is irrelevant to preparing.
Yeah.
You can always buy a bigger truck.
True, but I've actually been cutting back on purchases / backings on Kickstarter.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So what about you then?
So we, with our never lost power, pretty much, you know, just a couple hours, which though isn't crazy, because we've had quite a few winter storms here. What was the last one called? Was it Frida? I don't even remember.
I didn't even know they had names.
Oh, yeah, man. It's crazy when you look at the maps. They look just like hurricanes coming across. They just go across land instead of the water and hit the exact opposite regions that gets hit by hurricanes. But
I didn't realize we were playing a game of Spirit Island.
Oh, man. Yeah, but yeah, we got into the habit of watching movies for the last couple weeks at the end of the night, which has actually kind of been relaxing and nice, because generally we've been TV watchers and not movie watchers, because, you know, a movie's like a 2-hour commitment, where as opposed to 8 20-to-30-minute segments, or, you know, well, I guess 4 is the equivalent of 2 hours, but sometimes you can get out of hand that way. But we watched this past week, we have been catching up on The Matrix. Not catching up. We watched the first three, but rewatched the first three, because there's a fourth one that came out, which I'm not sure why I'm excited about it. Good marketing campaign, I guess, because I knew that I didn't like number three. And when we watched them again, that's kind of how we felt. I felt like I missed out on my calling, you know? Like, if I could have been in shape when I was... those came out in the 2000s. I also wasn't old enough. But you don't need to be a good actor to be in action movies in the 2000s. You just need to be fit, and that's it. And like, just be fit and be able to say a line. Bam. And wear a trench coat. And now you're in The Matrix.
With glasses.
Yeah, with glasses. That's true. You got to look good with glasses and a trench coat.
So the question is, which pill would you have taken?
I don't even remember which one is the one. I think the red pill is the one that put you in The Matrix, right?
I can't recall. I saw it so long ago. But the fact that you always play red, you're wearing a wet red sweatshirt right now, I find it hard to believe you would be anything but red.
Yeah. I don't care what each pill does. I'm taking the red pill.
That's it.
Don't explain it to me. I don't want to know.
Alluding into that, based on what your favorite color is to play in the games, what are some games you've been playing lately?
Oh, good. It's a better transition than last
night.
Hey,
get out of here.
I don't even remember what that was. That's ridiculous. Oh, man. I'll let you guess my theme for my games at the end. It's going to be fairly obvious, but that's okay.
Games you played with me?
Dang it. I didn't even have to explain it.
What do I win? Is that the quiz show at the end of this episode? Yeah. I win?
That is the correct answer. So the first one I'm going to talk about, I'll do it in chronological order, is Glass Road, designed by Uwe Rosenberg and published by Mayfair Games. So I think the current edition is the fourth, and that's Capstone. And I think I have the third edition. I don't remember. Second or third. Not a lot changes between each of them, so it's not really that relevant. This is one that is actually a little bit different from the typical Uwe game, at least in my opinion. So the theme is still pretty much the same, where you have your own plot of land that you are trying to clear stuff. So you're trying to clear forests and then build ponds, sand pits, and like park glades or something. I don't remember what those are called. The pretty trees, orchards maybe. And some buildings in order to build bricks and glass along the glass road. And it's actually kind of neat. The rulebook does have the whole front page is describing the theme of it. And I don't know how great the theme comes across or not. That depends on your feeling on Euro games, basically. But it's interesting to learn that kind of stuff, that it's set in the 1600s Bavarian road called the Glass Road. Or Bavarian Forest area called the Glass Road, rather. And so unlike most Uwe games that I feel like are pretty much just kind of decide what you want to do, or at least Le Havre is the one that I think of for that, because that's my favorite Uwe. This one is, you have a hand of 15 cards, and you choose 5 each round, and then you get to play 3 of those 5, and the other 2 you're holding on to because you're trying to guess what other people might play. And if you bring a card that someone else has played on one of their 3, you get to play it for a bonus action that round. And so I kind of think that this has a lot more interaction than a lot of the Uwe games, because you need to pay attention, at least. It's not so much interaction as like taking what other people are doing or building or harvesting or anything like that, but you are at least aware of what they're doing. So, and that kind of helps with figuring out what buildings you might want as well. I like it because it's in that 45 to 60 minute range, and I like that you have to pay attention, but I think that's pretty much my basic thoughts on it anyways. Not my favorite Uwe, definitely not my least favorite, and I'd be happily play that one again.
Yeah, it was a solid game. You're talking about the interaction. I think the thing that is super cool with it is if you play a card and I can match it, you don't get this like the best part of that card.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was 2 actions on the card, and if somebody matches it, you only get to pick 1 of the 2. I like that idea.
Yeah. So I guess it's slight. It's not. It doesn't feel negative, but I guess that is a slight negative interaction.
Yeah.
That you, but I mean, there's multiple ways to gain each resource that are on the cards too. So you're, I mean, 2 or 3. So you're trying to guess which card other people might play, and then you might take the less efficient card just to make sure that nobody else plays it, so you can get a double action or a bonus action out of it.
Yeah, I think it's got some neat mechanisms. It's Uwe Rosenberg doesn't, what did I say in the last episode, scratch the itch or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When you try to replace fill the holes.
Yeah. He doesn't fill my holes. he's fine. I liked the Feast for Odin. I thought that was an outstanding game, and the expansion helps that, but it's never going to break my top 10. And I think that's his best game that he has, according to a lot of people. So yeah, he just doesn't, he doesn't fill that hole for me.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I was glad you played it. I wasn't sure that it was your type of game anyways. I would also say that it's not, it doesn't seem like it'd be great at 2. We didn't try it.
No.
I think 3 was good. 4 would probably also be good, but I think 2 seems like it would be subpar.
Yeah. And you could
suboptimal.
You could solo it.
Yeah, yeah. He does have solo in most of his games, I think. Maybe not base game Agricola, but Lahav is the first game I ever played solo. So, what about you?
Speaking of filling some holes, the first game I'm going to talk about is Crokinaw. And the reason I bring that up is over New Year's Eve, we had some friends over because Veronica and I had done a kind of board game extravaganza where last year, I guess 2020, her and I played like 7 games on New Year's Eve. We played from like noon all the way up until midnight. And this past year, Veronica wanted to invite others, which you were invited if you weren't in Michigan. But so we had some people over, and one of the games that was extremely popular was this game called Crokinaw. So it was actually designed in 1876, and it's got, given that date, you think it's either too dated or it's too simple, right? Wrong. Because, yes, it does have a little bit simplicity to it, yet it is still a complex dexterity game. And we love dexterity games, as it's easy to bring back to the table. And this particular game was a blast with our friends on New Year's Eve. But also, when we lost power that week, we brought this out and played it by candlelight. And we've played with 2 different groups of people on New Year's Eve. We've played it 2 players, head-to-head match, which was a lot of fun. But for me, I like playing in teams because it's sort of like you're on the edge of your seat moments. And as soon as somebody hits a great shot, you like jump up and high five each other. We love this game. I realize it's not the cheapest game out there. And the company we bought it from, which was Mayday Games, is actually going to run a Kickstarter soon. And they actually, I think, have a bundle pack for $100, which seems really reasonable. But still, $100 isn't cheap for everybody. But this was a lot of fun. This is a game that I could see. You know, we're going to keep it for a long time. I'm probably going to display the board when we ultimately move to the new house. You know, have it displayed on the wall. It's a neat little game.
And don't they call that, isn't it one of those like grandfather games or whatever where you can pass it down?
Yeah.
Because it's one of those it's a big game that should be sturdy and like there's not a lot of components to lose or anything.
Yeah, right? And we've got like a box that holds all the disc. I forgot what type of wood ours is made out of, but it's excellent quality. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, it sounds fun and it looks like you guys had a good time, but
Veronica's really good at it. Until I started drinking more, I get better when I drink. It's a weird thing. I don't,
it's like a beer pong thing.
Yeah. Although don't drink and drive out there.
Yeah. Better for playing games, not for driving. Yep. Duh. Speaking of things that people do in the dark, what? Driving what? In the dark?
Filling in the holes.
Yeah. Filling in holes, what? Oh, speaking of filling in slots, my next game is Edge of Darkness.
Oh my God. We're going to.
Designed by John D. Clare.
We're going to cancel ourselves here, guys.
Published by Alderac Entertainment Groups, which is a card crafting game where you are filling different little card sleeves in, or not card sleeve. Yeah, you're filling card sleeves. Yep. Yeah. And those are the slots that are getting filled. This is a completely clean show. I'm not sure what you're thinking about. That's what I was talking about anyways. So, yeah, this is basically the more advanced version of Mystic Veil, I guess I would say, which we're reviewing today, which is also kind of what made me want to play it anyways. I felt like it'd be a good time to compare the two, which I'll do during the course of my review, I'm sure. But anyways, this is, instead of each person having their own deck, this takes the card crafting mechanism, which is, I forget what those are called, the little tabs with that have pictures. So there's each tab can go on the top, middle, or bottom, and you'll put it into a sleeve. And then this goes into a common deck. So there is one deck that everyone is using, but it's still a competitive game. And so I just thought that was a really cool idea, and that was why I wanted to try it. It took me a long time to get around to it because we didn't back it because it's a fairly expensive game and it's not any cheaper to get it now. I think I actually talked about this maybe early on the show, but so this might just be an update on my feelings, but we played it last night at 3 players and we played a higher complexity scenario and I definitely dug it a lot more. And so I don't know if it was because it was higher complexity or if it was because it was three players. So I'd be interested to try it again at a higher complexity scenario with Nicole and see. I mean, I would guess both of those things helped. I don't think either one hurt. But yeah, I mean, it's a fairly, it's not heavy, but there's a Euro game going on along with the deck building component itself. And there's ways that you can use other people's cards if you give them money, or you can take their cards and draft them and then discard them so they can't use them. And so there's kind of a, it's not a really harsh take that, but it's a strategic deck builder kind of, since it's one deck, there's decisions to be made. And then you're using those cards to fight monsters. That's pretty much all I did yesterday, so I don't remember anything else you can do with it. You can sleeve other cards.
Wow.
And you're trying to get more advancements into your own deck of cards, because at the end of the game, those are worth points as well. You can train agents, which are like your little worker meeples that can go around, except they're miniatures. They're not meeples. Yeah, I don't know. It was a lot better this second play that I had. So I'm glad I gave it a second try.
Fair. Yeah, I looked it up. I had reviewed this in my banter section back in June of last
Maybe
year.
Maybe that's what it
was. And at that point, I'd played it solo, I think, six times. I really digged it. It was top tier game for me. And last night's game kind of dropped it down a little bit. It's still like, it's still in the eights,
yeah.
But it doesn't deserve to be up in the nines by any means. Cause I think there was some not all paths were balanced the way you went, but I still like the fact that different strategies and we all kind of got around the same points at the end of the game. It's a good game. I think I prefer it at two players or solo with a AI bot, simply because I kept trying to get the monsters to attack like a certain person, and I just couldn't get it to do that. So I think it's good. It's just, it's not in the top tier for me anymore.
Yeah. I mean, that's not surprising to me. I think that it's like the typical things. You like that more cutthroat nature of two player. And in a two-player game, I specifically don't like cutthroat. So that's why I like the three-player better.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, my next game has got a lot of cutthroatness in it. And that's a game designed by Antoine Balza and published by Repos Games. And that is Seven Wonders. Now I know what you're thinking. Seven Wonders, you think that's a welcoming or a gateway game. But I would argue it's not. So we as in Veronica and I have played quite a lot of Seven Wonders Duel. It's probably one of our most played games that we have in the collection. And the original, the OG, for you youngins out there, sat on the shelf of shame until this gathering of friends on New Year's Eve. So it was a fun enough drafting game. It's pretty easy to teach, and everyone got the hang of things after a few turns. But the most interesting part for us was in age 3 out of 3, every single card is overpowered, and it really pushes you to go a specific route, such as the military or the sciences. And after we finished the game, Veronica and I sat down and talked about it, and we both had the same critique, where even though when you're playing, like, it's an even playing field, theoretically, but really you could take advantage of some novice players who are sitting next to you based on this drafting mechanism, as well as your military attacks, whoever is to your right and to your left. So we found it's a little too swingy in that regard, that we wish it was a little more balanced. It's going to stay in our collection for now, but I could honestly say maybe not forever.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't have it, obviously. I do like it, but, I like it for its really high player count.
Yeah, because it plays up to 7.
Yeah, I like playing it at 6 or 7. And so it feels to me a lot less cutthroat at 6. I've actually never played it less than 5. The OG Seven Wonders, as you say. Yeah. But yeah. Yeah, I think it's a great, like, that New Year's Eve gathering is probably the best kind of place to play that.
Yeah, it's just Veronica and I's experience with the game system within Duel, I think, was an unfair advantage when we played against them. Although Veronica didn't get second in that scenario. It was actually one of my co-fellows. Mm. She got second. She played well, but nice. It's good. I don't know what its lasting power is going to be.
Gotcha. Yeah. Different strokes for different folks. Yep.
That's the beauty of this hobby. There's plenty of games mm-hmm. for everybody. But let's see if Mystic Veil is right for you.
Today we review Mystic Veil, designed by John D. Clare and published by Alderac Entertainment Group, or AEG. In Mystic Veil, players take on the role of druidic clans trying to cleanse the curse that has been placed on the Valley of Life. The spirits of nature cry out for aid, and so the clans must use their blessings to heal the land and rescue the spirits. It requires not only courage, but caution, as those who try to wield too much power can overwhelm the lands, causing it to spoil, or even draw the spirits of darkness out, causing the curse to strengthen. Whichever clan can cleanse the land best will be remembered by the spirits, until the next curse is placed at least. Is Mystic Veil a board game beauty? Or has it pushed its luck too far and brought about decay and rot in the board game industry?
So Mystic Veil, everyone's going to start with a starting deck of 20 cards. You will set up your field by flipping the top card of your deck to become your on-deck card and place it into your field. Then turn over a new card to be your on-deck card. Repeat this until three cursed lands are visible. At this point, you can push your luck by planting your on-deck card, but be warned, as you must flip the next card in your deck. If it shows a cursed land, then you bust. Consolation prize is flipping your mana token that you could use to buy stuff in the future. But if you choose not to push your luck, or you are lucky, and you can then proceed into buying advancements from the commons. There are level 1, 2, and 3 cards that get progressively more expensive. You will harvest your cards, aka use your mana on your cards to purchase those advancements, or some fertile soil. Here's the cool thing. You will take those advancements and add them into the sleeve of one of your cards. Without getting into the details, those advancements provide all sorts of ways to get victory points, mana, and even mitigation against those pesky cursed lands. There are also veil cards you can buy with spirit symbols, which can also give you a cool one-time bonus, or just victory points at the end of the game. Speaking of the end of the game, it's triggered when a set number of victory point tokens have run out, so be careful when you're building those really powerful cards, as you might not have a chance to utilize them.
All right. Thanks, Josh. I think that touched all the bases.
It filled all the holes?
I did the best I could to avoid it. I couldn't do it, though. All right. So after the rules, the first thing we start with is first impressions and aesthetics. I think, for me, this is like the highlight of Mystic Veil, is the art style. And I don't know, just looking at a lot of those cards, they're all, they just have some new pretty element to it. I mean, right, it's like mystical, magical nature. And there's a lot of bright colors on it. The one thing, I don't really know where this belongs. I kind of think of it in aesthetics, maybe, is just the difficulty of initial setup and then setup and breakdown, just of unsleeving all those cards every time.
True.
It's not a ton, but it's more than your average deck builder.
More than your average player.
Yeah. And depending on how you break down the game, like I know, as you saw with Edge of Darkness, I do it the same, similar way with Mystic Veil, where I have it broken out and then it's in each individual set. So that's a big... And so that's the one thing I would knock it on in aesthetics, just because I don't know where else to put that other than overall thoughts.
So my first impressions, believe it or not, you may or may not remember this, is you taught me this game. It was one of the first nights that I started gaming with you guys. And I remember you had that conclave.
Oh, yeah, big box. Conclave. Yeah, yeah.
Huge box. And it made me feel like the game was very overwhelming. During that first play, I still remember how cool it was sleeving the advancements into the card. And I also remember how cautious I was not to push my luck too much. Because I remember you push your luck a lot.
Yeah.
But
things don't change.
Nope. They did not when we recently played this together.
Yeah.
So you mentioned how cool the art was. I totally agree with you. I love this art. There's just something about really good art in board games. And it's,
yeah,
I think that's sort of like going back to Uwe and Glass Road. That art doesn't do anything for me. It's yeah, fine. This is really cool art and it draws you in. And I find that I look at the pictures just as much as I look at the advancements to learn the powers.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree. This is, darn, I don't remember. There was something you said that I wanted to comment on. Wish I would have just interrupted you. Oh, well. Moving ever forward. Next thing we talk about is rules. I mean, I honestly don't remember how I learned this game anymore. I know that there, Rotto has a video on it, and I'm sure a lot of reviewers have a video on it. So I'm sure I watched somebody's video back in the day, and it was probably during the time when Nicole used to read rules and then explain how the game was played to me. But I think the great thing about this game, especially with the base game and the first three expansions added in, is there's not really that much to remember.
Yeah.
Like, there's not any difficult things that happen on the cards that are like, oh, what does that symbol mean? Or what is it? Like, everything kind of makes sense.
Yep.
And I think once you start adding the big box expansions is when it can start to get tricky. I mean... Not significantly difficult, but like you had to explain that transformation one that happens. I think that's in Nemesis or Harmony. I don't remember. I think
that's Harmony. Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely didn't remember that one.
Yeah, so, I agree.
But yeah, otherwise.
The rules themselves were easy enough to digest. The rule book is extremely clear. It's probably one of the best in the business. And it is a caveat that the deck and the on deck can be a confusing concept, especially for newcomers.
Yeah.
And I think it could even be confusing for deck builders, like people that are seasoned veterans of deck builders.
Yeah.
So I think that's one thing. For the videos, there was actually one published by AEG that was extremely thorough. It had examples. That was fantastic. And I think it's only like 7 minutes long. So it's short and sweet, gets you straight to the point. And you're right, all those expansions are easy to fold in, and you really just have to look up maybe a couple little things here and there. These aren't expansions that are truly game-changing like some other games. It's, hey, you want more of what you love. This is all right, so theme and setting. What I would say is that overall, a forest theme, that's just what I'm going to call this, is not a huge draw for me personally. But how the game utilizes advancements really works with that theme. A dragon is powerful and gives a lot of victory points, but it also will have a cursed land symbol associated with it. And there's a lot of examples of this because there's like 200 unique advancements over the 6 expansions, and all of these cards can be seamlessly added, like we just mentioned. And I think that's a testament both to the rules that we just said, but also to the theme.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're spot on there. As far as deck builder style games go, this one does definitely above average, maybe one of the better or best ones, rather, as far as each card making sense for what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
It's not really, to me, on the lines with Lost Ruins of Arnak, where you're like, oh man, I'm using this to get this and do, like, I don't feel the action of it happening. But like you said, the card that I think of is the Hatchery, which is where there's a bunch of Monarch eggs, I think, is on it, and there's a monarch or a butterfly. And when you have that card, then whatever card that's on, as long as it wasn't your first card, it goes back into to be your first card the next draw. And so that's kind of a cool mechanism integration with the theme / setting. So and I agree, this the druid setting, forest setting, whatever you want to call it, is whatever to me.
But it works.
But it works, and the art, I think, is so well done that it attracts me anyways.
Yeah.
All right. So next thing is gameplay, starting with mechanisms. So this was the first, it's not the first card crafting game. There is one before it. It's like some sort of hero combat deck building game. And I cannot remember what it was. I was going to look it up, but I forgot. Hero Quest.
No.
I don't remember.
Nor Hero Escape.
Yeah. You'll look it up while I'm talking. But yeah, I really like the mechanism twist that card crafting is to deck building. That instead, because it eliminates that, or doesn't eliminate, I guess it changes the way that in deck building you whittle your deck down to like 5 or 6 cards and you have perfect prediction of what you're getting. In this, instead of trying to whittle your deck down, you're stuck with 20 cards. That's the max you can ever have. But you're trying to manage the spoil, which you start with 9 of. And if you can figure out a way to negate those 9 spoils, then you could theoretically play 20 cards, which isn't impossible. I think that's usually the strategy I like to shoot for, just because it's fun. But yeah, and I think it's reasonable to get to 12 or 15 without trying too hard. But
yeah, unless you're Veronica, who has mastered the ability to have growth symbols which negate or mitigate those pesky cursed lands. She's fantastic at that.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's what I mean. I think that's the most fun, for me as well, the most fun way to do it. I'm just not as good at it as Veronica at building points and doing that at the same time. Yeah.
So this is something that you had mentioned more in the banter section with Edge of Darkness, but the designer, John DeClair, wanted Edge of Darkness first. He wanted to publish that game, and AEG said no. They wanted a smaller bite game. So he went back to the drawing board. He had this great concept, but he needed to refine it a little bit more, and that's how Mystic Veil was kind of created. And some might think that, as a result, that this game would be the ugly stepsister of that larger, expansive game. But in fact, once he added that unique push-your-luck mechanism, it really makes this game fresh from that comparison.
Yeah. The game I was thinking of is Custom Heroes, by the way. Sorry.
Yeah, I tried to look for it. I had no idea what you were going for.
Didn't mean to completely ignore what you were saying.
It's all good. Well, that...
and it actually is John DeClair and AEG as well.
Okay. Well, that's a good flow into the next topic. Flow. So, when you think of a game with so many unique advancements, you would expect play to be slow. But, in all actuality, with Veronica and I, we found that if one of us purchased those advancements that we really want, there actually is another good advancement right behind it. So it doesn't cause you to stop and be like, oh, that's what I wanted. I guess I'm going to take this lesser card. It really keeps the game moving forward all at the same time. We rarely experience any of that hesitation, hemming and hawing over which card to take. Thus, we had faster turns. Well, until, like I said, Veronica creates these epic hands that she goes on and on and on and on and has massive amount of mana and purchases all those cool level 3 cards. Well, anyways, one person could definitely create a massive combo chain, and you could theoretically push your luck while they're doing that and immediately bust, so your turn's over.
Yeah.
Super quick turns.
Yeah, I mean, I think the flow to me is both a pro and a con, actually. Because the flow being that it's fairly quick, specifically only if you have people all preparing their turns at the same time.
Yeah.
Right. So, because we played a 4-player game and I don't think I ever waited for my turn. You guys might have waited for me sometimes, but like we were going so fast that like people would be taking turns while other people were buying stuff. Yeah. And so that to me is also the con, is that that can be, I don't know about dangerous isn't the right term, but like I had no idea what almost anyone was doing. And so I couldn't even explain to you what strategy was successful that Veronica did, or like why mine was worse or why yours was worse. Cause I had no idea what anybody did. I didn't even know what cards most people were buying because, and so I would say that comes at a price. And so I think I would prefer to play it a little slower than we did, That might be the first time I've played 4. You said that we played 4 the time I introduced you. That may be the case. I don't know. I've never played it. If so, 4 is the max I've ever played it at, regardless. I don't think I would want to play it at 5 or 6 because there would be that big pressure to play it. So at that speed again, because otherwise the downtime would be so long. And when we play it at 2, I don't feel bad. Like it, I think the length of game is probably rolling into that. If you don't,
that's a good flow.
It is. I think it's about the same. We played probably 45, maybe 60 minutes for 4 players.
Yeah,
60 if you include the teach, I would guess. And I would say that's about the same it takes Nicole and I to play 2. But that's just because we play a little bit slower, I think. And there is some downtime just necessary by having to prep your cards that way, then, right? Because you don't have 2 other people's turns to get your cards already.
Sure.
So it's a pro and a con. The pro is that it's a quick flow and that you really don't need to pay attention that much to what other people are doing. The con, I guess, to me is more just that I can't learn from the game.
Yeah.
Like I can't watch what somebody else does and be like, oh, that would be a good idea. How can I like take their idea and make it better or something? Or take their idea and make it worse. You know?
Yeah. It really is dependent on what advancements are available when you're going to go purchase, because you could have a specific strategy. Like for me, there's these little helmet symbols, and some card advancements will say you get mana equivalent to how many helmets, or you get victory points to how many helmets, whatever it might be. I like to go that strategy. And I think, I can't remember if it was in that 4-player game or Veronica and I have played this quite a lot. There was one game I couldn't get any helmets. So I tried to go that strategy early on, and I had to pivot because they just weren't available. So, you know, I guess you're right that it'd be nice to learn from others, but at the same time, you're so dependent on what's there on the commons to purchase, more so than, say, a game like Dominion, where you know what's there any given turn.
So, I mean, this is more to me in like replayability or variability. Is that and I mean, this is, I think, down to how you have set up your box versus how I prefer to play the sets.
Yeah.
And it doesn't need to be I've only played specific sets that they've designed, but even if you played pre-designed sets, because when you do that, you know there are 3 of each card in the game. Yeah. And so you know what's coming out and what's in that deck. And you're not going to get through the whole level 3 or the whole level 2 advancements, but you will probably, even in a 2-player game, get through all of the level 1s.
Yes.
And so, like, you know, hey, there's only 2 cards that have helmets, which is 6 total. That's a waste of my time. When we played it with everything mixed in, some games it might be great, some games it might be terrible. So that's why I like the sets thing. But
that's why I like mixing everything in.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're the one who complains about the swingy, so that's what
I don't mind it in this game.
Oh, in this game,
yeah. Okay. So kind of discussing my point of view of the length of game. So the box has 45 minutes. And yeah, what you said is true with how I've built my game up. So those victory points, early in the game, those victory points are never gained. How you actually do acquire them is if you play a card in your field that has that victory point symbol, you would then acquire a victory point from that stash that's slowly ticking away. So what we learn is that you don't get them very early on. They're like never earned. But then when you start crafting some of those super powerful cards and you don't bust, all of a sudden now you've got a pile of tokens just vanish and the end game is triggered immediately. So you really have to be cautious. I think in that 4-player game, it was slow, slow, slow. I actually think it took a little more than an hour with everything. But there came a moment where we had, I think it was like 20 tokens there. We went through one turn of all of us and there was like 2 left.
Yeah.
They just got gobbled up.
Gone, yeah.
So another thing that's key to the length of this game is when you're planting your fields while the other players are taking their turn, it really does speed it up a little bit. I know what you're saying. It doesn't give you a chance to look at others and get those strategy.
Yeah.
But this game would go so slow if you didn't do that. I reflect back to playing Dominion with my buddies. And one of them, wouldn't lay out their cards or decide even draw his cards.
Yeah.
And it was so slow. Love the man, but he was slow. That's also why we call him Toronto. Anyways, I think it does. The length of game is also dependent on the pusher luck versus purchasing advancements. If you're like me, yeah. I'm not a big pusher luck man. I'm going to just buy an advancement, especially like a fertile soil. Those things are highly underrated. Veronica thinks so too. Versus you, you're a pusher luck demon at this game.
Yeah.
Demon, not an assassin. Just note that.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, because the pusher luck, you know, in this game especially, you're going to win maybe 1 out of 10 times.
Yeah.
But when you do, it feels so good because you crush everybody so bad. Yeah. But, you know, it's only happened once. So.
Yeah. Well, is this game fun?
But yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have fun with it because I can kind of pursue a different strategy each time, especially with the different expansions. It's not an automatic, yes, super fun, but it's not a, like, I'm somewhere in the middle, above average on fun, okay. I guess. I mean, I don't feel the feels of super fun, you know? I don't feel as emphatic as I did when I was reviewing Wingspan or reviewing Lost Ruins. But I do have fun when I play this game because, it, like most engine builders, you can kind of figure out a way you want to go. I would say that depending on how you have set it up, mixing all the cards in, that may make it so very difficult to have a strategy at the beginning of the game.
Yeah, and we had a new player play that night with the four of us, and I thought she did extremely well with handling it.
Yeah.
But so for fun, I said absolutely. And the card crafting system is fantastic and not just a gimmick. There's something about shuffling a card that has some heft to it. Plus, I'll always have fun with a solid deck builder. Now, you're going to disagree with this next point, but I think even setup and teardown is easier than you would imagine. Maybe it's because of how I
think it's because of how you do it. Yeah, yeah.
I like it that way. So one thing I did notice in one of our plays were overpowered leader cards. So leader cards come with one of the expansions, and it allows you to add this leader into a sleeve of a blank card. They're going to give you some cool bonus or extra mana, and if you spend enough mana, you can flip the card to its more powerful side. The game says draw two, pick one, but I hate it because I think about 60% of them are just okay or straight bad, while about 15% of them are so overly powered it's a joke to play against. So I personally have a house rule that I draw three, pick one, and I think it worked pretty well in that four-player game that we did. I want to play with these leaders, but the differential sometimes really takes away the fun from me.
So I was thinking on this because you did say that I think before we played, maybe it was after
it was before.
And the way that you've experienced the game versus the way I've experienced, I think makes a huge difference because I don't feel that way. But again, because I play with the sets, but not only do I play with the sets, I literally have played base game plus one expansion, base game plus expansion two, base game plus expansion three, not like expansion one and two.
Yeah.
Like literally just the one expansion. So nothing ever felt overpowered because it was always combined with the set it was supposed to go with. You know?
I gotcha.
Like the leader matched the cards that came with that set. So I don't know. I think that's why they can be swingy. But yes, even if you played with the sets the way that like they recommend breaking them into the specific conclaves and then deal two leaders out and get one, that would still result in the same kind of thing you're talking about. I agree. Only if you play it specifically base game plus one expansion that would it work.
Yeah. And see, that's not as much fun to me to explore this magnificent world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, solo, I kind of have to add that there. So solo, you actually need the Nemesis expansion in order to play it, and it provides a, you guessed it, Nemesis that is added to a card in your starting deck. The Nemesis can cause different negative actions and typically just adds more cursed lands to you. The actual AI will select certain advancements depending on the round and will accumulate victory points towards the latter part of the game to speed up the end of the game trigger. It's easy to set up and play. It offers a good opportunity to play Mystic Veil in a different way. And I actually chose to play this to play it solo, even before the two of us had decided to do this review. So that was one of those, I was excited to pull it down and play it solo. So I think that's my phrase is it's a testament to this solo.
Yeah. Did it live up to your expectations?
Yeah, I liked it. I ran it, I think, 3 or 4 times back to back to back. Oh, nice. So like, yeah, that's one of those, I don't do that with every single solo game. More, yeah. Even though you think I do. I don't.
Yeah. Is this as good a time as any to talk about my blurb on each expansion?
Yeah, because this is replayability.
Right. Yeah. All right. So I'm just going to go through the order in which I rank them, which is a very loose ranking because some of them have been a long time since I've played them standalone. So it's based on what they add to the game and how much I liked that mechanism twist, basically. So Nemesis goes to the bottom for me only because it's the only one I haven't purchased and haven't played. So I can't in good faith rank that, at least not as standalone. It adds the level 4 advancements and the solo mode. The level 4 advancements are kind of whatever to me because they're super hard to get.
Yeah, they're like 30 mana.
Yeah, and solo mode, as you know, is not... I don't dislike it, but it's not, you know, not what I'm searching for.
You hear that? Our audience is booing you.
Wow, that's crazy. It came all the way through. It time traveled all the way and then came in.
Anachrony did that.
Next for me is Veil of Magic, which was the first one that came out. This was kind of mostly just more of the same. It didn't really change any mechanisms other than maybe adding veils that weren't just worth points. So it made them, veils kind of did something more interesting. And then it added more helmets. So 67% of the cards in that came with helmets. Nice. So it fixed that strategy. Next for me on the low at number 5 is Conclave. It adds the big box. It lets you play up to 6 players. As I said, don't care about playing up to anything more than 4.
I can't believe this isn't lower.
Having the big box is pretty important. That is what made it higher.
Gotcha.
Because if I want all those expansions, I need to fit them in the big box. It also did add the spirit counters, which is kind of nice. They're not my favorite way. I think it could have been done better than what they are.
True.
Those ones that add the spirits, but they do make the gameplay a lot easier than having to count your cards, especially as the game
you would want like a dial.
Yeah, that's what I want, a dial. And then it does add those pre-tested sets, which are called conclaves. So I do like that. Then next for me is Veil of the Wild at number 4. That's what adds leaders in. That's probably my overall favorite mechanism in the game, being added to the game, is the leaders. But every other expansion since it has also added leaders. So I was taking the perspective of, if you were going to buy the newest Mystic Veil, the redone set, I still wouldn't put this in the top half of ones that I would buy. Because I think the next ones are better. Next for me is Harmony. Harmony is a big box expansion, so it can stand in instead of using the base game. You can use everything in Harmony as if it's a base set. And then it also adds leaders and amulets. Amulets were added in Mana Storm. I like amulets a lot. That's instead of flipping over that mana token when you bust, it has some sort of special power. I really like, as per usual in any expansion, I like adding things that add unique, asymmetry starting powers. Next for me, at number 2, is Mana Storm. This is the one that added amulets. These are my favorite of the amulets that are added in because they're not super complex. They're fairly straightforward, and so they haven't gotten kind of out of whack yet because they were able to do simple things with the amulets. And then this is my favorite of the small box expansions. But my favorite overall is Twilight Garden. The reason I like Twilight Garden is the black negative points. It lets you push your luck even more than the push your luck strategy.
Well, it's also nice because...
curse tokens, I guess they're called.
Yeah, and there's some cards and leaders that you can convert those curse tokens into an action or something like that, which is awesome. I love that strategy. You and I both did it, that 4-player game. I love going that route. You're right. I can't disagree too much with your picks there.
I'm sure you would put Nemesis higher.
I would. In Conclave, it's just a box to me. Which, yeah. The thing I will say, we had mentioned this in an episode a couple of weeks ago with Valley of the Kings, also published by AEG. They're mm-hmm. nowhere. They make these boxes and they come nowhere close to filling them.
Yeah. And that's probably the case for Mystic. I mean, it will definitely be the case for my Mystic Veil, because I don't feel like I need any more Mystic Veil than what I have.
They could publish 8 more expansions or 6 more, whatever it is, and you still won't fill this box.
Yeah.
It's the box is too big. I hate it. I do. It's too big.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree it's too big, but you do need it because, I mean, you need something bigger than the base box is all I mean. Because the base box is what I was using, and once I got to Twilight Garden, it did not work anymore.
Yeah.
You could fit the 3 small expansions with taking everything out and just like stuffing stuff in, but then once you got to Twilight Garden, you couldn't fit 2 base games in there. Not and be semi-organized anyways. It might have like fit, but you know, depends if you want to take the Eric Martin
approach. Oh gosh, we're not getting into that.
And so the summary, I guess, from all that is that for me, replayability / variability is through the roof because there's so many expansions, it's impossible. Like, I don't think you could ever possibly play every possible combination.
I agree with you. Yeah.
All right. So overall score, here on Meeple Night, we have reverted back to a 5-point scale, which is 1, not fun, I would pass it fast to play. 2, the game is okay, but not likely to hit the table. 3 is a good game, worth playing in the right situation. 4 is a great game, almost always willing to play, need to have access to it. And 5 is an amazing game, among my favorites. Must own it. I would like you to go first because I'm still kind of ruminating about... I am halfway between 2 scores and I just want to see if you can say anything to convince me. You usually do, so...
Well, it's good. All right, so I'm going to lead with a caveat that I think my review could be a little biased because I had such a good memory of that first time that we played this game together back in 2019. Still, I think it's a really good deck builder that offers a lot of variety and different play styles every time you play. But the best part is the gimmick. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
The card crafting system. I love it. But there is a downside too, and it's those veil cards, because I typically don't go that route when I'm building my deck, and some of those overly powered leader cards. So we didn't really mention the Veil cards, but the Veil, you purchase those cards by spirit symbols, which could be on those, or they're going to be on those advancements that you sleeve. So you kind of have to decide which route you're going to do when you're building your deck. So I don't typically go that route. Still, I wanted to highlight that. This is a game that I'll always be down to play, and I can see us as a family playing frequently. With my comparison and the banter between Crokinole and Seven Wonders, like some good lighthearted games, I can see that it easily fits in there with that. So this is another game that AEG has published as a deck builder. I think it's fantastic. I actually think it replaces Valley of the Kings for me. I almost considered getting rid of Valley of the Kings, but I love that Entomb action. That's how much I love Mystic Veil. So I'm always going to choose this as one of our go-to deck builders between Veronica and I, although I'm going to teach her Dominion this week. So with everything into consideration, there's still some flaws to it, so it does not deserve a 5, so it gets a 4 from me.
All right. Yeah, so to me, this scratches the itch of push your luck more than it does deck building for me. And I think it's kind of because of what you had mentioned when you brought up Dominion and said, you know, like there's a little bit more predictability in what you're buying. And that also just goes to, you know, the style of deck building games where you have the river versus just 10 set decks. And this is somewhere in the middle of that. And so I think I generally prefer the 10 preset decks type thing over the river. But I like pushing my luck. And so like that you have given me the push your luck aspect of a game, but also given me some sort of deck building, engine building mechanism to, I don't know. It scratches a good middle itch in there. A good middle itch that's just really hard to get sometimes.
Yeah. It's the middle of your back. You have to do the Jungle Book.
Yeah. Get on a tree. Yeah. And I agree. I would be always willing to play this. And so the thing that was between 3 and 4 for me is like that I have this thing where I get overwhelmed when I buy too many expansions for a deck builder. So I need to have this right balance and know when to stop. Because I just start to think like, oh, there's so many, I don't, you know, I'm not going to play with all of them. I don't know. There's some weird psychological thing that's going on up here that I can't explain. And so that was what kept me thinking about 3, but anybody who ever asked, I would play this. I would play it again at 4. It's not my favorite. I'd prefer to play it at 2 or 3, but I still think it was a good game at 4. And I actually do want to try the day-night Eclipse thing sometime.
Oh.
Daemon. Gives Mystic Veil a 4. Josh's Nightman. Also gives Mystic Veil a 4. That makes Meeple Knight score 8. And finally, we introduce a new section. Quiz Show! This was a topic that I wanted to explore, I guess. It's not really a topic, but a segment. Because I'd heard it on a few other shows, and it just always seems like a fun way. I don't know. I like Quiz Bowl, Jeopardy type things. So maybe our audience won't like that. But I like listening to other people answering questions and seeing if I can guess them right while I'm listening, or learning some random factoid that, you know, there's like a 0.1% chance I remember later. But
yeah. The main thing with this as listeners is give us feedback. If this is something that is interesting, if you just kind of want to see, you think we're quote unquote experts within this field, we're really not, because some of these are, I'm going to stump Andrew. And
that's what the point of this is. It's just to prove I'm not an expert. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. It's also a combination of all the game shows I've watched since I was a child. So the first one is I'm going to determine.
Oh, hold on.
You're the missing link.
I want to know what's the format here.
I know. All right. So this is a feature that's going to be topics based off tonight's review game, Mystic Veil. So all of them are multiple choice except for the last one.
Okay.
All right.
Are they 1 point apiece?
Yes, they're just 1 point. We're going to keep it simple. We're not doing Tom Vassell.
Do I have 150-50?
No.
I get one poll the audience?
No. And if you get a low score, you're a bozo. Yep. So,
oh boy.
It's out of 4 options, every single question except for the last one. There's 10 questions.
Right. How about we see if I can answer it, and I'll ask you for the multiple choice, just because I am always curious.
All right, fine,
if I can answer it before.
How about
that?
This
doesn't need to be a lifeline.
No, I got it.
I just made it harder for myself. Dang.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Terrible idea.
You get 2 points if you get it without the choices, and you get 1 point if you need
the
choices.
I like that.
All right.
So it's unlimited lifelines, but they're just worth half the value.
Yeah. All right. So what was John DeClair's first published board game?
Oh Lord. All right, you're gonna need to give me the,
all right,
I'll have to take 1 point.
Mystic Veil, Edge of Darkness, Rumble Pie, Kapow.
Man, I was thinking I might guess Mystic Veil. I do not know that there is a game named Rumble Pie, but I'm sure that's gonna be the right answer now that I've said that's the dumb one. So I'll guess Mystic Veil.
The answer is Rumble Pie.
Ah, yes, I knew that was going to happen once I
got it.
See, it didn't matter whether I was going to get it or not. So all I did was give myself negative 2 points.
No, you're not going to lose points. You just don't gain them. I'm nice. Yeah.
No, I started at 10, and everything I get wrong, I see.
Well, really, you'd start with 20 if you get it.
Oh, there's 10 questions.
Yeah, okay. There's 10 questions.
All right. Sorry, I'll stop taking my time.
Number 2. What game is John DeClair's next game soon coming to Kickstarter?
Oh, no. I do know this one. Just give me the choices, though.
Dom Perrier, Rolling Heights, Sink or Swim, blazing.
Oh man, I was very confident until you said sink or swim. It's Rolling Heights. Rolling Heights.
You are correct.
Sink or swim is somebody else. I don't remember who that is.
Neither do I. But I think it is a game.
Somebody I got
on Kickstarter.
It is. Yeah, I got an email about it. So. Yeah.
All right. Number three. Which of these titles is not published by AEG? So this one.
Oh,
you're just,
how am I supposed to guess?
Yeah, you're just gonna have to get it.
Hold on. Role Player. Yes. Yeah. 2 points.
All right. Valley of the Kings, Mystic Vale, Mashup, Cat Lover.
Is it Smash Up or Mash Up?
I thought it was Smash Up.
Okay, I just wasn't sure what you said.
I said Smash Up.
Okay.
I'm not trying to trick you with that name.
Then it's the last one, Cat Lover.
Because what is it called? I'll give you another point if you know name.
Cat Calico.
No. It's Cat Lady, not Cat Lover.
Okay.
AEG is soon. Dog Lover is about to be released in the next week or two.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did see that because they were saying that.
Yep. So,
response to Cat Lady. Yep. Just 1 point. Just 1 point.
1 point. All right. Number four. This is titled Dice Dice Baby. Can you correctly guess which of these John DeClair games utilize dice? Ecos, Space Base, Custom Heroes, Downfall.
All right, it's for sure Space Base. Well, the first one you said was Ecos, First Continent. That's definitely not dice.
Okay.
Custom
Heroes, which we've already talked about on the podcast.
We did talk about. I wish I would have paid attention when I went to that BGG page instead of just looking at what it was. I think that one probably does have dice.
Okay.
And what was the last one?
Downfall.
I've never heard of that game.
He published it with Tasty Minstrel.
With Tasty Minstrel? I'm going to say no to that. Okay. Is it going to be 1 point per thing?
Why not? So your Ecos does not use dice.
Yeah.
Space does. Custom Heroes does not. Downfall does not.
Oh, it was just one. Yep. So it didn't matter.
So through four questions, you have 5 points.
Oh, that's more than I thought. Yep. Nice. I'm not even keeping track of my math.
All right. So now we're going to go into the category called Push It. According to Board Game Geek, what is the highest ranked push or luck game? I'll let you answer without multiple choice.
All right. Am I locked in if I make a guess and I'm wrong?
No.
Okay. I'm going to guess Quacks of Quedlinburg.
No.
Okay. Give me the multiple choice. Whew, I eliminated one of them.
You did, because it's going to be Quacks, Clank, Feast for Odin, Codenames.
Oh, God. Get out of here. This is one of those stupid push your luck got added and nobody...
Yes.
there was something else that I did that I told them, get rid of this because it does not belong. It specifically says in the whatever. I'm going to guess Feast for Odin. Why not?
You are correct. Feast for Odin is ranked the 22nd best overall game ever created.
I knew it would was high. That was the highest rank on the list.
I also don't understand where Pusher Luck is in that game at all. But I'm using Board Game Geek, which everybody swears by, so let's do it.
Oh,
all right.
God.
Sadly, there is no card crafting mechanism listed on Board Game Geek. So tell me what my highest ranked deck construction game is that I've played.
The highest ranked deck construction game. So I would guess Dominion because it's probably pretty highly ranked.
Unfortunately, it does not fit in this category of deck construction.
What? Oh my God.
So,
like construct a deck ahead of time, maybe it means. I don't know.
I don't know what it means either, but I'm going to give you four options. They include Angel Fury, Rescuing Robin Hood, Grab Your Goat, Gears, the Deck Builder.
You've played these games?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought it was the highest ranked game that you've played.
I have.
Oh, you've played one of these.
Yes.
Grab Your Goat.
I wish. That sounds awesome. I want that game right now. Like, count your chickens and grab your goat. But sadly, rescuing Robin Hood is the answer. Gosh. Now, the reason
this is ridiculous.
This does sound stupid, but this is a testament to, I had mentioned this on my banter section in an episode back in October. So that's why I specifically chose this as an answer for a question.
So you wanted to just prove that I wasn't listening.
Yep. And I successfully did that. All right. Let's go back to Mystic Vale. How many reviews on Board Game Geek are there for Mystic Vale? You just give me a number within a...
oh, my God.
Tens, a hundreds, thousands, or 10,000? How many?
10,000. There's got to be a lot. It's been around for, like, what, 2016 or 17? 10,000.
It's actually 9,900. So you are the closest with that answer.
Nice.
So this is not Price is Right rules of going over. So you get that.
You were supposed to guess 1,000.
All right. When did you say Mystic Vale was released?
I think 16.
It was released in 2016. Oh, nice. What won the Spiel that year?
That's a great question. Isle of Skye.
No. How about from these choices instead? Imhotep, Stone Age, Codenames, Broom Service.
Broom Service. No, wait. Stop. Codenames did win the Spiel, actually, didn't it?
All four of these have won it.
Oh, man.
I'm a jerk.
Yeah. Well, I know it's not Stone Age because that just had a, like, 10th anniversary, and I know it's not whatever other one.
Yeah, but that could be, like, the Castles of Burgundy, which had a 20th year anniversary when it wasn't even 20 years old.
All right. So Isle of Skye, I think, was 2015. So the question is, was Broom Service...
Who designed Broom Service?
Alexander Pfister.
Would he have back-to-back?
He did have back-to-back, I think. Yeah, let's do it. Let's go with it.
Well, it's enough.
And I think Codenames was 17 then, I guess. But I don't think that's...
Codenames is 16. Vadel Shavatel won it in 2016 with Codenames. All right. So Canvas is another similar card crafting mechanism that was just released in 2021 after a successful crowdfunding campaign. How highly ranked is it on Board Game Geek as of right now? Is it in the top 100? I'm being nice. Top 100, top 250, top 500, top 750.
Canvas?
Canvas.
It was released this year, right?
2021.
Or 2021, yeah. Yep. Top 500.
Soon.
Yeah,
it's currently ranked 591.
Yeah.
This has really moved up.
The newness is always a...
It helps, but it's also a fantastic game. So any listeners out there...
The newness hurts.
On Board Game Geek.
Yeah, because that was actually... Because I followed up on when you thought that your list would have more in the top 100.
And?
No, because you have newer games.
Ah.
So you had three that were not in the, or whatever. You had one, three that were not in the top 250 or something like that. I don't remember if I have my, I wrote it down physically, but our averages were very close.
Okay.
Because you did have more, the ones that you did have in the top 100, were more highly ranked.
Yeah. Like Marvel Champions, Dune Imperium, Lost Ruins of Arnak, all of those are really high.
Yeah, let's see if I saved it in Excel.
I think even Too Many Bones has broken the top 100.
Yeah, Too Many Bones was a high one as well. Imperium Classics was not. That was one that was really... Yeah.
Well, it's too heavy for people.
But yeah, I didn't write down which of yours. You had one that was 234, one that was 772, and one that was 592. And it was... Twilight Imperium Classics was one of them.
Wow. 590.
Hadrian's Wall was 592.
592, which is one behind Canvas.
Man.
Yeah.
That was at the time or right after recording, so I don't know what they are now.
That's fine. All right, so last question of the night, because you got to redeem yourself. You're at 7 points.
only gained 2 points since the first four questions.
Yeah, you did well, and then I just started stumping you. So fill in the blank. Everyone loves these back in grade school. They were the best questions. What's the highest ranked deck /bag/pool building game on BoardGameGeek?
I'll guess Clank for that. No, ooh, wait. Slash pool. Oh, so this is going to include Orleans. Orleans is my answer.
So you're going to kick yourself. What's the number one ranked game on BoardGameGeek?
Gloomhaven. There's no way that's deck/bag/. I mean, it is. I guess it has
slash.
That's so dumb. I mean, it is in there. I guess I'm just not thinking like the BGG mechanism page.
It's so silly, but it was a great way to create very difficult questions. But also to make those listeners out there, we've mentioned Gloomhaven a couple of times, and I thought this was an interesting way of looking at it. I didn't think of it as a kind of deck builder. It's not a deck construction. It's a deck builder.
Yeah. Yeah, so the card crafting, you have to go. It's in a series to look it up. Mm. But they don't have but it's only AEG games. So I don't know if no one else has made card crafting games or what.
They might be trademarked.
Yeah. I was also wrong. Custom Heroes came out after Mystic Veil. So Mystic Veil is the first one.
Well, there you go. So, Andrew, you've earned a score.
I even got my own question wrong.
You've earned a score of a 7, which is 1 point less than Mystic Veil. Yep. I would
7 out of 20.
I would still give you a better score than Paleo. And Andor.
Oh, man. I should have just not asked, or I should have just only done the multiple choice.
Yep. But give it a fair shot.
Yep. That's all right.
There's better luck next time, to quote Happy Gilmore. Well, listeners, hopefully that was an interesting new segment, something different. You kind of get a different flair for us rather than just smattering on about different discussion topics. And hopefully you played along and you probably did better than Andrew. And if you did, reach out. I'll give you a virtual high five.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Feel free to reach out. I had a in-depth conversation about some Cosmere readings with Mike the other
day. Yep.
The other days, I guess. So in depth, I guess, may be questionable because it was across emails, but it was a good conversation. So.
Yeah. And him and I are going to potentially start a Clank Legacy or a Pandemic Legacy saga.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Before you leave. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I have not played Clank Legacy. Pandemic, I don't know which ones you have, but I would probably recommend just going to season 2, but
yeah, we'll see.
It depends on you what you want.
Yeah, so listeners, hopefully that was interesting, and thanks for tuning in for another episode of Meeple Night. Andrew, we mentioned they should reach out to us. What's the best way for our listeners to get in touch?
The best way to reach out to us is either on our Instagram page, maybe our Facebook page is probably the least checked way, or our email, which is meeplenightpodcast@gmail.com.
So thanks for tuning in for another episode of Meeple Night, and we will see everybody in a fortnight.
Good night.
And good luck.
Thanks for listening to Meeple Night. Today's episode was recorded in Charlottesville, Virginia on January 21st, 2022 and uploaded using Anchor. Our theme music is All Night by Declan DP, provided by Audio Library Plus, which provides free and safe music for content creators. For all the latest from Meeple Night, follow us on Instagram, join our Facebook group, or email us at meeplenightpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks, so until then, dream a little dream of games.